From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made on Friday, when more than 700 school districts across New York State have a deadline. Friday is their deadline to submit plans for reopening schools in September. Districts have to come up with plans for a full reopening, a fully remote learning plan, and a hybrid. Over the past week, many districts have briefed parents on some of the components: how to bus students while physical distancing, how to eat lunch differently, expectations for masking, what's realistic and fair, how many kids in the building at one time, sick policy, and more. We've talked to superintendents and doctors on this program. Today, we welcome the voices of parents who have some very hard decisions to make. All of our guests this hour are parents, and they all bring different points of view to the reopening process. Welcome to the program. A father of two, Chad Barb, is with us. Hi, Chad.
Hi, Evan. How are you?
Good. Thanks for making the time to be with us. Millie Safranik is the parent of three, two of them in K through 12 school age. Millie, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Kara Austin is with us. Kara is the mother of one. Kara, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
And David Baumgartner is with us, the parent of two and also a teacher himself. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Four different points of view. And I know if we had 100 parents, we might have 100 slightly different points of view. Let me just start by asking you where you are on your own plans on this. Do you plan to send your kids back? And do you have the full details from your district yet? I'll start with Chad on this one. Are your kids going back to school?
So we've decided that we're not going to send our kids back to in-person classroom. We are lucky enough that we have my wife. We actually just closed a business due to COVID, so she's home and can do the home thing. At this point, we're not sure whether we're going to do homeschooling just kind of full-on on our own or use whatever the school district provides us in their fully remote option. Penfield hasn't given details on what that option is going to look like yet, so we're waiting to find out what that's going to look like.
Okay, but either way, they're not going to be in the buildings. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
That is correct.
And why did you make that decision?
So my wife and I stressed about this a lot, and it's a few reasons. The first is it's my son's first year. He'll be going into kindergarten. And both of us, the thought of him starting his school career with masks and social distancing and less access to all of the things that make school for a kindergartner fun, just was so unappealing to us. We have the opportunity to not put him through that. Obviously the safety is another concern. We both trust that our kids will be able to maintain the masks and the social distancing, but we're not in control of other people's kids and how they react and are able to keep those things in place. So just between the two of those, the safety aspects, and also just since we are able to keep our kids out, it lessens the burden on the district. And since we are able to do it, we feel like it can kind of help the whole situation to keep our kids out of the building.
Gotcha. Listeners, let me also mention before I turn to the other parents for their plans, let no one convince you that I, as the host of this program, or anyone associated with Connections, is coming to this program interested in making any parents feel badly about decisions or feel that they're making. Every parent is making a decision that they feel is right for their child, their family, sometimes themselves based on their own health or needs. This is one of the hardest parenting scenarios any of us could have imagined, and parenting is always hard. So so much love to all parents, all families, all caregivers, guardians. This is not easy. And I'm with you. I've got an 8-year-old. This is not easy. Millie, you've got two in K through 12 schools. How old are they and what's the plan?
Yes. So I have one that's going to be a senior in Rush Henrietta, and the other is going into second grade. So because of the age difference, the needs of both of those kids are very different. My senior will definitely be going back to school no matter what the design is that the school decides on. Rush Henrietta has not yet released any information, but I trust that they are working to take into consideration all the complexities. And I'm very lucky that he is highly self-motivated, self-directed, and that he will be conscientious when it comes to things like masking and social distancing. So if he is in class, I know that he's going to maintain safety. Okay. For my 7-year-old going into second grade, if it's going to be mostly online learning, I don't believe it's developmentally appropriate to have a 7-year-old sitting in front of a computer for extended periods of time trying to learn remotely. So if it's going to be remote learning, I will probably choose a homeschooling option rather than having him using online for extended periods of time.
Okay. Kara Austin, a parent of one, what's the plan? What's the plan?
So like Chad and his family, we have a kindergartner who's slated to start this year. So there were a lot of parallels in the thinking I noticed as I was listening. The main thing being safety, and my husband and I just kind of looked at the risk and what would we consider a regret? If we kept we're leaning towards keeping our kid home. If we keep him home and everything goes as best as it possibly can, what does he miss out on? What is the regret? Well, we might regret that he misses some of the socialization, that he gets a delayed start to in-person classes. But then the flip side of that is if he went to in-person, classes, what would we regret if things went poorly, if there was a second wave, a new spike, there was an outbreak at a school? And it's like those regrets are much more difficult to live with. He could get sick. We could get sick. It could be spread to other people, in our community. And it's just for us, that was not an acceptable risk. And then to layer on top of that, the idea of this being his first exposure to K-12 education. And right now he's a kid who loves learning. He is so sad that he did, his preschool ended early because of COVID. He misses his friends, but it's hard to imagine what this looks like as a vibrant and healthy environment for a kid to really continue to love learning and being part of school.
So, Kara, I, as you talk about having a would-be, well, he's going to be technically a kindergartner, but having a child who would be so excited to be there with friends, to make new friends, I just want to ask you a couple of things about the hard choice that you're facing here, because I'm sure there's so many listeners who can relate to this aspect of it. In March, when I remember just sitting down on my couch and just it all sort of settled over me. Like it was right before that Saturday that the schools closed technically, but it just felt like it was inevitable. If you remember that time, and I was thinking about my boy who was in second grade, and I sat there on the couch thinking he's not going back to school. He's not going to see his friends at school. It's done for the year. He's probably not going to have camps. He's probably not going to play in a soccer team that I coached. That's all gone. And I just sat on my couch and I just cried. I just needed to feel that. And then it was like, all right, so what are we going to do about this? And once in a while, I still give myself that time because, I recognize ultimately that a lot of kids on this planet, my child has a lot of advantages and he's going to be fine either way. But I still ache for the loss of socialization, just the joy of seeing friends. He said recently, am I allowed to hug my friend if we see them outside? It's like, you can't. And and they get it and he follows the rules and he's really good about it and he's hanging in, but it hurts. And he's a couple years older than yours. So I'm asking you, I want to ask how you're doing with that. And I also want to ask you, do you think you can talk to them in a way that says, hey, I want you to know whatever we decide here, you're going to be great. Like, is that something that you could sell? You know what I mean?
I think that my husband and I work really well at selling it to him better than we sell it to ourselves sometimes.
Yeah.
But I remember I had a similar moment. So my office went to work from home before his school officially closed down, but we made the decision that we were going to go forward keeping him home as long as we could. And I went to his preschool to pick up his stuff. And that's, I was like, I'm probably never coming back in this building. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just very likely that this is it. I thought, you know, and that's back when I was picking up snow pants and boots and all that stuff. But since then, like, he talks about his friends. He'll ask, like, you know, hey, and in the beginning he tested it more like, I want to go see my friend Jimmy. And we, you know, we explained to him again, and we've talked about for him, we talk about the yucky germ that's out there that's different than the, you know, the regular germs that might give you the sniffles. But he's kind of come to accept it. He's been really good about masking. We've done like Zoom play dates with some of his friends, mm-hmm. where, you know, I was really surprised with how well he took to that. But they just had four to five, they just show each other the toys they have and act silly and goofy. But yeah, I think he's just, is funny enough, this morning he asked, he goes, when I go to kindergarten, am I going to go to school? And we hadn't really told him anything about that yet, because we don't have the information from the district. Yeah. So we were like, that's going to be we'll have to talk to him about it when we get that. And so I told him this morning, I was like, look, buddy, I don't think so. I was like, the school doesn't have a plan yet, and we think the safest place for you is home. You'll still do kindergarten things, but I think you're going to do it home with us. And he's like, his face fell a little bit, because he's been looking forward to riding the school bus and making new friends, all the things that, like, picture books about going to kindergarten are about. Like, I've kind of hidden those for right now, because I'm like, this isn't what it's going to look like. Either way, this wasn't what it's going to look like. So yeah, there's definitely a bit of mourning, and you know, I have a brand new backpack and lunchbox I bought, you know, with the best of intentions at the beginning of this, thinking like things would be better by school, and they're probably just going to sit there in the closet till next year.
Don't make me cry on this program, Kara. I hope all the parents understand, like, you know, we've got to do our best not to have parent wars right now, and there's going to be different decisions.
Yeah.
But I feel it. I feel it. David Baumgartner, you're a parent of two. What's the situation with your family?
Yeah, so it's dizzying, kind of. Our kids will go back to school, and, you know, we've tried to do a really good job of getting them to understand how to be safe, and I trust that they would make good judgments with masking, that they have empathy, that they will, you know, think about their classmates when they're at school. I'm also trying not to sweat things that I don't have control over, you know, and trying to trust the leadership of the school district, and which is really great top to bottom. We've had the experience in West Aranacoy. So my kids will be going back to school. You know, I have a seventh grader who's going to a new school and is just crazy excited for it. I have a ninth grader who's also going to new school and is very excited about that too. So my son has Down syndrome also. So the in-school experience for him is vastly more rich, and he can be more successful in that setting than the home, the homeschooling situation. Mm-hmm. So that's another weighing in our decision.
I do think, David, that, Kara referenced, you know, her kindergartner to be pretty good about masking. I think kids have stunned me with how quick and they've adapted to masking. And I wonder if you feel the same, David. I've been very impressed with kids.
No, so have I. In the neighborhood, kids have been great about social distancing. I think that it will be something that will be kind of maybe even something that kids will gravitate towards the school to kind of follow the rules. It's going to be wild for some age kids. I mean, I teach eighth graders, and I don't know, rules are made to be broken a little bit. So I have some concerns a little, you know, with that. But with my own kids, I just feel like we've tried to set a good example and have them follow.
I will say, as a former eighth grader myself, David.
Yeah, I was one.
That was, I mean, boy, oh boy, middle school boys, man, you are doing really, really hard, important work.
Thank you.
And I hope they can hang in and follow the rules. And let me just share with, I'll share with you, David, one thing that I was told by a representative of a district, a local district today. They said that as we get ready with plans, there's a group of parents who've been expressing to this particular district, if you don't have a masking rule, my kid's not going. But there's also a group of parents, a different group, who says, if you have a masking rule, my kid's not going. I mean, I don't know how we, I don't know what we do with this.
I mean, the only real conversation that I've had with somebody with a mask on over the last 3 months has been the guy who cuts my hair, really. And, you know, it's hard. It's hard to have a conversation with a mask on. I can see parents leaning either way. You know, in my class specifically, in social studies, conversation and input is like the lifeblood of having a successful class. And masking, it's a real challenge. As I'm looking forward to it, you know.
But do you really think it's that limiting? It's that difficult to have a conversation with a mask?
I do. I mean, I think it can happen. I mean, it's going to take a while to get kids comfortable with that. I think, you know, even if I run into somebody that I know at the grocery store, it's usually a short, quick little conversation. It's going to have an impact on my class for sure.
Okay. No, I definitely would expect that there is some impact, and it's not perfectly, you know, the same level of clarity. But
yeah.
But I'm hosting the show with the mask on right now. And, you know,
okay.
People hear me pretty well. So I just want to, you know, I just want to put in for all of our ability to continue to communicate with a mask. Here, I'll take the mask off. The difference is probably not that great. I mean, a little bit. There's a difference, but it's not huge. But I also
right.
I also know, David, that every little detail matters when you're trying to get eighth graders' attention. So that's a challenge. So that's for parents, and there are panelists this hour. But listeners, if you've got thoughts as parents as we think about reopening schools, we ask you to do one of two things. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We usually have an email, but email has been down today. You can email our producer. She's been able to get to her email. It's mmack@wxxi.org. mmack, M-A-C-K, at wxxi.org. If you want to share your thoughts as a parent, and we want to hear what your biggest concerns are, or maybe what your biggest needs are to make sure you feel good about sending your kids back. Or maybe you've already decided that you're not, and that you want to share your perspective there. Because districts have a Friday deadline. New York State has a deadline of the following Friday to decide whether districts will get the green light on this. But a lot of districts are putting some of those plans out now. And we saw Superintendent Grautman, for example, last night leading an online discussion. There's a number of districts that have already done that to just kind of get parents ready for all of the different considerations. And we know it's not easy. Let me read Nate, who writes the following. Nate says, as a country, we need to prioritize the reopening of schools as an essential business over leisure activities such as bars, etc. We need to understand that education does not simply refer to how much knowledge a child gains, but that the social aspect is equally as important. If we deprive our children of an in-person educational experience, we are detrimentally affecting their future as socially responsible individuals who understand how to interact and work together with others. That's from Nate. His kids are going back, definitely. You know, Chad, I think you're the parent on the panel who's made the 100% decision your kids are not going to be in the building. And I'm not, you know, kind of pitting you against Nate. I'm just curious to know what you would say to a parent like Nate who says, we got to get them in person. It's just as important as whatever the book learning or the educational aspect.
Yeah, I mean, so I would not disagree with what he's saying about the importance of that. I guess I would say it doesn't outweigh my health concerns at this point. I also feel like a year delay in my second grader or my third grader, or my kindergartner, you know, interacting with other kids in the school setting is, in my opinion, not going to, you know, in 12 years when they graduate from college, they'll remember the time that they spent at home. They're not going to remember the things that they didn't get. So I'm not personally concerned about it. We're also like, as things have eased in Monroe County, we've eased sort of our personal restrictions in the neighborhood. So like we're allowing our kids to be outside with other kids, certain families to an extent. So we're getting that socialization in other ways. We're also thinking about trying to maybe pair up with some other like-minded parents in our neighborhood to get some of that socialization during the school year. And we want to do some things like possibly like go travel while we're and get some experiences that we wouldn't have otherwise been able to get, obviously while social distancing, but that we wouldn't have been able to do in experiences that they would never have gotten if we were stuck in the school building. So we're going to just try to make the most of it. And I guess those concerns don't really outweigh my health concerns.
Yeah, I hear that. Millie, what would you say to Nate?
I have to agree that, you know, I obviously have concerns about the socialization aspect, but I do think it's a little extreme to think that that is the be-all and end-all. It's 1 year that we're talking about, and I think that most kids are going to have at least some socialization with a handful of other close families, and that it's not going to have a significant long-term impact. I think the greater concern for a lot of people is on some of the other social and emotional needs that high-needs families might have, resources that they're able to access in schools. I feel very fortunate that, you know, that my kids are probably going to be okay no matter what happens, but I don't feel comfortable that that's the case for all families.
Okay. Kara, what do you think?
I think that education is essential. I don't think that in school, in the building, is absolutely essential for education to happen. I recognize that we are in a very unusual situation. We are in a pandemic, and we have to be flexible with what, you know, it would be ideal for all kids to go back, sans masks, normal, and that would be great. But I kind of get, I have trouble understanding the, we're just going to do it because it needs to get done mentality some folks have. And it makes me like think back to how we kind of treat threats of like terrorism, where it's like, we're going to live our lives like as close to as we did before, because we're not going to let them win. But this is so different. The threat is so different because it doesn't care, and it's invisible and potentially airborne, and being together, you know, all in one place is how it moves through our community. And again, like that risk to the health, you know, if a child gets sick, or, you know, or a teacher or a parent gets sick or dies, that has an impact on the child too. And that's detrimental. So again, it's weighing what are you willing to risk? What kind of regrets are you okay to live with? What makes sense for your family? And for us, it's in-person school, you know, it's not worth the risk. It's not worth the, you know, the regret would be different.
Okay. David?
I hear myself in my head kind of agreeing with everybody, to be honest. But the socialization piece, I think, is going to be important. You know, I can just think of my own kids. They're both very social. They miss their friends, and it has happened out of school in small clusters of kids. But I think going back to school, especially for my son Sam, is very important. He made really great had great success with reading, and you know, at school he gets that specialized instruction, which was really important to him. He gets all services there that we can't provide at home, OT and speech, which is all kind of tied together. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, there'd be just some reasons why we think that's kind of, you know, the best move for our kids.
Yeah, I totally understand that, too. You're hearing David Baumgartner, a parent of two, also a teacher. Kara Austin, a parent of one. Millie Safranik, a parent of two K through 12 age kids. And Chad. Chad Barb is the father of two. All talking about the hard calls that parents have to make here. And that time is coming, with school districts submitting their plans for reopening in September by Friday. New York State next week will decide the answer. So after our only break of the hour, we've got a load of phone calls to take. More parents weighing in on what they want to see and their perspective on schools reopening on the other side of this break. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, mask etiquette. Who is enforcing it best? Which businesses or stores are doing a good job of making sure people are masked up? And what do you expect them to do when people aren't? We'll talk about all of that in our second hour, Sex and the Pandemic and the Impact on Couples. We'll talk to sex therapists. Talk with you on Thursday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So let's work through some of your phone calls. Dennis in Williamson is first. Go ahead, Dennis.
Oh, hey, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. you know, listening to the panelists, and I grew up in the city and the surrounding area, but now we're out in Wayne County and Williamson. It's a different experience, and we're ultimately going to keep our – we've got two in high school, one is still in the middle school. The thing that kind of put it over the top for us to keep them home was my daughter, who's 11, was having an online conversation with her friends, and one of the friends and several of them joking about, oh, yeah, it's going to be great because a teacher has to stay 6 feet away from me. If they try to take my phone away, I'll just pull my mask down and cough on them. I'm like, oh, you know, culturally – it's tough because I live in an area that thinks very differently about masks right now. And, you know, the sentiment is more of the, I guess what you'd find on the right wing spectrum when it comes to mask wearing, and the school's doing their best to try to come up with a hybrid versus a full home. And it just, but when I think about the, like you were talking earlier about eighth graders in general, I mean, we've had years with our older ones that have already graduated where we had issues with things like Confederate flags and swastikas and other nonsense. So for us, I think out in the, you know, living out in the Wayne County area, it's definitely a different kind of consideration for us.
Okay. Dennis, thank you. I appreciate that perspective. Let me ask the teacher on the panel. That's David Baumgartner. What do you expect the district to do if there is aggressive ignoring of masking? And David, that's with the point that you made earlier. I mean, this is maybe, you know, you can't expect 100%. Kids are going to have sort of weak moments or get frustrated, et cetera. But if you have kids who are actively sort of mocking or flaunting their disrespect of certain rules, what do you as a teacher expect to be the recourse there?
Well, there was a similar situation with junior high kids having their cell phones at school, and a lot of schools struggle with that rule, you know, where you put the phone, if you can have it on them, put it in their locker. And the leadership at my school where I teach really put their foot down and rallied the staff to vigilantly, you know, take a phone if you see it first time, you know, make it sting early in the year. And I didn't see a phone all year, practically. It was very successful campaign. And I might encourage something very similar with masks. And, you know, something with the phones worked. I think something with the masks could also work.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. Dennis, I appreciate that perspective. Let me get Gail, who is calling from Wayland. Go ahead, Gail.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for having my call.
Sure.
I'm a pediatrician in the rural area. And I always have to go back to Shakespeare at dark times, which is, you know, black and white be madman's folly. You know, shades of gray is where we live. And I'm currently on the task force to consider at least the social emotional well-being of considering reopening our small school. And it is difficult. I've been mask wearing, and my little kids have been mask wearing for the past 5 months in my office and doing pretty well. So I think that they adjust well to it. I've had to deal with parents who are certainly against it and have talked with them, and they're also understanding. So I think we don't give a lot of credit for the flexibility and resiliency of our children. However, it's going to be difficult to reopen, and I know our superintendent and school board are struggling mightily. Kids need to be in. I've never had more patience with depression and anxiety in my 30 years of practice. Everyone is struggling. Kids are struggling. Teachers are struggling. They're figuring out what to do, how to educate. And I think we have to be flexible and understanding. Increasingly, a lot of my patients' families are considering homeschooling or hybrid schooling. We're a poorer community, so parents have to work. They don't have online.
We lost
everybody. So we're really trying as a community to figure out how to do it, to be resilient, to have community resources, to have places where kids can go if parents have to work. And I think we're just trying to be kind.
Yeah, and Gail, let me just jump in because we're losing the quality of the call, but I do appreciate the sentiment there. And, boy, one question I would love to ask task forces. Sort of building on Gail's point of trying to kind of live in the gray and understand, you know, maybe a new way of doing things. I'm a little confused about one thing, and maybe I'm wrong, and I'll start, I want to ask all of our guests about this, but I'll start with a teacher because he's both the parent, but he's going to be teaching, David Baumgartner. I'm confused about why there's not more emphasis in the fall on outdoor learning, outdoor classes. Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is. Maybe there's conversation about holding classes outside under the big oak tree quite often. Is there any plan for that that you're aware of, David?
You know, there hasn't been a definitive plan that's been released that I'm aware of. You know, so it's, I know that that's part of a national discussion, and we definitely have the space. And again, you know, the goals that I've heard from our district is to bring as many students back to campus safely for in-purpose education as possible. You know, that's the stated goal. And I think that they're looking at all different options. I think outside, you know, some classes could definitely go outside. I could bring my class outside for sure.
Okay. Carol, would that change any of your viewpoint in the fall if a majority of classes, or at least in good weather days, were going to be outside?
I think I'd have to know more about it to make a decision, but I wonder how this would conflict with existing policies that, you know, the other Uniquely American experience where they have to worry about safety as far as, you know, keeping kids protected, being, you know, like active shooter drills. I wonder if that's why we don't hear people talking about it as much. I have no insight, you know, by being on a school board or anything, but when you were posing that, I was kind of like, why wouldn't we do that? And I was like, oh, you know, they lock all the doors once the kids get inside school. I wonder how those would align.
Okay. Millie, how do you feel about it?
Well, I'm always in favor of getting kids outdoors as much as possible, no matter what the weather is. but I can certainly see a number of concerns. There's, you know, some children are prone to running away or elopement, and, you know, having to corral kids and focus their attention might be presents its own challenges.
Okay. Chad, would it impact your thinking at all?
I don't think it impacts my thinking. I think it's a phenomenal idea for the kids that have to, that need to be in school. And I want to reemphasize from my own personal, like, where we're at, where our decision is made from a place of privilege and that we're able to do this. So I think for the kids that, you know, either their parents have to work or for whatever reason where the children do have to be in school, absolutely, you should explore all the options for sure. But for us, I think since we can relieve some of that burden from the school district and allow people to be more distant, we'll still keep our kids home regardless of anything like that.
I wonder, Chad, if you can relate to the sentiment from Ariel, who emails to say, besides the health and safety factor, one of the most important reasons for me to keep my first grader at home is that it makes more room in the classroom for the kids who don't have the choice to stay home. It makes it that much safer for everyone. That's from Ariel. Mm-hmm. What would you say to that, Chad?
Absolutely. That is a huge part of what our reasoning has been. Like I said, we're able to do this, and it relieves the burden from the rest of the district. So for sure, 100%.
Okay, and that sounds similar to what Kara has expressed. Is that fair, Kara?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it also gives more space to for the kids who need those services or that specialized education that comes from the school that can't be replicated at home. You know, if having less children, you know, like less people in the building, makes it so that those who have to be there can be safer. You know, that's important too.
Mm-hmm. Let me get Jason and Webster on the phone next. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, obviously I'm concerned about, COVID and trying to meet everyone with where they're at in terms of, you know, where they're comfortable. And unfortunately, I think that's going to lead us to a hybrid system, which could be every other day. It could be half days, what have you. I'm just wondering what, you know, parents are going to do with their kids during these half days, every other days. Are they going to be able to take off from work? A lot of people are already financially strapped. Would the kids have to go to a daycare where they're exposed to a bunch of other kids, other adults, only to have to go back to school the next day? Would they have to stay at home with a grandparent who would be perhaps more susceptible to COVID?
Mm-hmm. All fair questions. And so, first of all, Jason, thank you for this. And as I turn to our parents on the panel, Jason's concern is one that superintendents who were on this program a couple of weeks ago brought up their concern with how complicated a hybrid model would be. And yet we are starting to see a lot more evidence that districts are coalescing. Well, not coalescing. Every district's doing it a little bit differently. But there's a lot of hybrid models out there. I haven't seen the final plan for my boys' district, but the talk that we're starting to hear is that there would be a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday in the building, Wednesday out of the building for cleaning, et cetera. Again, I'm not condemning or saying anything about them, just observing that that's one possible model. But to Jason's point, what happens to parents who don't have options on that Wednesday? Where does the child go? Does that create a more complex family situation, maybe for grandparents, maybe a more dangerous situation? It's possible. One of the things I think districts must quickly tell parents is, because here's one thing I don't even have an answer to, and maybe our guests do, and maybe I just have missed it. Obviously, you've got the option to have your child learn remotely. What I don't know is, can you make your own hybrid? So let's say a district says, hey, we're going to come back Monday through Friday. Can parents say, okay, but I'm going to do Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and we'll do Tuesday, Thursday at home? Or must you pick full remote or full plan? I don't know the answer to that. If there's a hybrid schedule, do you have to go with the hybrid the district creates? Can you create your own? I know it's complex. I don't know. David, do you know the answer to that offhand?
No, I don't know the answer to that question. But, you know, I know that at the beginning of distance learning, I heard a lot of input and noise about, you know, we can't do this. We can't do it. And we did it. And I feel that it's so unprecedented that a lot of these things that sound doable very well might be, you know, like having kids make their own schedule. I've never heard of that, but you know, setting goals to bring kids back safe, maybe that's a part of that, you know, of keeping that in mind and having a lot of different ways of doing it. I don't know.
Okay.
Evan, I can answer that for Penfield.
Sure.
Think.
Yeah, yeah. Chad, go ahead.
My reading of the documents that Dr. Putnam has sent us is that it's not an option. It's you're either 100% remote or following their schedule. And I think Penfield is only a two days in, 2 days out, and then a Friday, everybody together remotely is what they're proposing. But it doesn't deviate. It's everybody's either doing all or nothing.
Okay. Millie, are you hearing anything about Rush Henrietta? And how interested are you in sort of creating your own schedule?
Well, yeah, Rush Henrietta, again, hasn't released any details. So I know I was talking with some other parents, and people are very concerned about how that's going to work, particularly when you have multiple children at multiple different schools. So I could potentially have my 17-year-old watch my 7-year-old, but if they are both in school on opposite days, that's not going to be an option for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're still discussing what's going to happen, and it's really kind of dependent on what options the school puts out for us.
Okay. And Millie, how concerned are you for all of the parents juggling jobs, transportation, all of those complex things that are going to become more complex in a hybrid model?
Oh, I'm very concerned. There's not even a lot of options right now for people who want to send their child to daycare. So if a parent wants or needs to send their child to daycare, what are the options out there? What about a situation where you have a child, you know, a parent with a child who's maybe a little bit older, like 11 or 12, where maybe a daycare situation would not be appropriate for them, but does anybody really want to leave their 12-year-old home alone for extended periods, you know, of time mm-hmm. every day? It might be something that's appropriate for, you know, a few hours after school every day, but for them to have to manage their own education, it's a huge concern, and I don't think there's any real answers I'm hoping that we as a community will be able to come up with maybe some creative solutions, that maybe, you know, some parents are talking about doing some parent sharing. So that, that, you know, maybe the children will all go over to one parent's house and they will be able to assist with the schooling at that particular parent's house who can be home.
Oh, boy. I think it was David who said earlier in the program that in March there was this talk of, well, this is going to be hard. We can't do this. And we did it. I think making the point, certainly a point that I take, which is all of living in a pandemic, well, most of it is hard. And we are all doing things that we probably thought we could not do. So the idea of hybrid learning probably seems the hardest and most complicated. I think we can do it, but I do think that there has to be consideration for those families who maybe are in a harder spot or can't. I mean, you know, so David, I take the point that we did things in March and April we didn't think we could do. We could do this hybrid thing. But I am worried about single parent households. I am worried about parents who are working. And when you hear about Florida State, for example, they had about 3 days last month where they were telling employees, hey, if you're working from home, you can't have kids at home. We're not going to allow that. We need your attention. That lasted about 3 days until the backlash said, no way. I think we need real understanding from employers about what work from home for parents may entail. Because if we're going to do a hybrid model, we've got to try to accommodate in a lot of different directions. Is that fair, David?
Yeah, it's very fair. I mean, I teach eighth grade social studies. I had an eighth grader at home who was learning remotely, and it was hard. I mean, I'm a teacher. It was very hard. And so I can appreciate all of the parents in June who were like, I am so glad school's over. And there was a lot of parents who were really glad school was over.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I also think that there's a lot of different ways to do this. And I trust the people that are making some really, really hard decisions.
Yeah. Before I get Rachel's phone call, I have a number of comments along the lines of, you know, Evan, you and the guests are assuming that it would just be this year. We all hate to think about this. But what if it's not just this year? Kara Austin, would that impact your thinking of when your child enters a school building? If we could somehow know that the pandemic ends, and I mean, I know there's not like one day that it ends, generally speaking, that there's going to be phases of this stuff. But if this thing doesn't really end until 2022, does that change your thinking at all?
2022 wouldn't change my thinking if it was a situation where it's like, this will never end.
Oh, my God. I didn't want to think about
Evan,
it.
Yeah. This is why I don't sleep. This is where my brain goes.
I'm so
but
with
it,
you.
And in our family, it's been like, well, you know, we have to make the decision for the situation we are in right now as it is. Because we all know that you can wake up tomorrow and it's something completely different.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I don't like for all I can do is all that's as far as I'm allowing myself to think right now is for the, and it's not even the full year. It's this school year.
Yep.
How are we going to survive this school year? And at the end of it, if it's like, well, we'll probably have to do this another, you know, we'll be in this situation for another year. I have to see how this year goes.
I think that is I think that's a very sort of wise and grounded view of how to just kind of deal. I mean, nobody knows when this ends. Let's just deal with what's
nobody
in front
knows.
Of us here. Yeah.
Chad,
do you agree with that? Or would your thinking change at all if it was basically, if scientists came out and said, look, this, we're making no progress on a vaccine. Thankfully, they haven't said that. But if they did, would that change your thinking on when your kids are in a school building, Chad?
I don't think so. I guess I don't even want to think about it.
I know.
It, I don't think it would. I think our biggest concern between my wife and I is the safety of us, the safety of, I've got family that are very susceptible to complications. So for us, I don't think it was changed because, like I said, we're able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I have faith in the scientific method. I think it's going to work. I think we're going to get a vaccine. That's just my personal opinion, though. So I guess I'm just trying to be optimistic.
No, I share that optimism, my friend. Absolutely. Rachel in Rochester on the phones. Got a point about transportation. Go ahead, Rachel.
Hi, I'm curious of how they plan on transporting children via bus or if it's a drop-off system. It seems like if it was a bus, that would delay getting to school and decrease the time that they can actually be in school themselves.
Yeah, that's a huge one. So, Rachel, thank you for this. My understanding is that buses will be expected to be physically distanced, and some bus rides are pretty long to begin with. I didn't get to see every minute of Superintendent Grautman's online discussion. I think this came up last night. I don't know if districts have really solved this yet. David, do you know, as a teacher, if districts have sort of cracked this problem?
I actually don't. I know it's a big concern, but I don't know what the decision has been made. It's my kids are in a district that's limited busing, and they walk to school. So again, it's a little less of a concern there. But you know, the whole community doesn't have that luxury.
Yeah, no, that is a luxury. Either walking to school, being in that range, or being able to drive into school. That is not all families, and nothing I'm saying is new here. I mean, all of our panelists know this, but certainly the superintendents and those leading the districts, they know it. So that's going to be part of the plans that the districts have to submit to the state on Friday. It's not just what do you do with a kid in the classroom. It's how do you get them there in a timely fashion and safely. So that's part of it, Rachel, and we are all watching and waiting for that one. And so I appreciate it, and I know that is not – that is a very, very big challenge to solve here. Let me get Dorothy in Rochester. Go ahead, Dorothy.
Hi. My question is, again about transportation, because in the city of Rochester, the RTS system supplies the transportation for older kids. And I have a child going into middle school and a child going into high school. And I know currently RTS isn't enforcing any type of mask wearing. And in fact is, you know, being isolated from the passengers, so they would not be able to enforce any kind of mask wearing. And in general, that's my whole concern with any of the opening up, is whether it's a store, a restaurant, the DMV, that even though there's mask rules in place, there's not enforcement happening.
We hear that quite often. We're going to talk about it on this program tomorrow. That's a very big challenge. And so I think that that's some of what David Baumgartner was touching on, kind of comparing it to the cell phone rule, just making sure that there is a plan for enforcement, while also maybe showing kids some grace. Like, this is going to be different. This is not going to be fun to wear a mask all day. I think kids will get used to it. I think they already largely have, but this is a long stretch of time. So, but I think there's a difference between showing grace and then making sure that you are not tolerating obviously obstreperous behavior when it comes to masking, because that's a key aspect of safety. I don't want to overplay one study or one bit of data here, but if you look at Israel, there's been a number of countries where kids have been back in school, and we haven't really seen widespread infection as a result of schools in a lot of places. But Israel is a point of concern. Israel squashed their infection curve in the spring. Kids went back to school in May, and then Israel had a heat wave. And so they relaxed masking requirements because it was so hot in schools. And that is almost exactly that coincided with a surge in cases that have now led Israel to be, in the last month, has been one of the highest rising case numbers per capita in the world. And the experts do believe it was related to schools reopening, but it was also coinciding with relaxation of mask rules. Now, that's one piece of data. I want more than one piece of data. I want to see a lot of data. I don't want to just say, oh, that proves it. Kids shouldn't go back, or every kid should wear a mask every second of the day. Because I'm open to what we heard from Irondequoit, what we heard from Honeyoy Falls Lima, which is kids wear masks when they're moving around, but when they're sitting at their desks, they can probably have the mask off. And David Baumgartner, a teacher, does that make sense to you? Is that kind of what you would think, or do you think it's going to be masked all day?
It's going to be either one. It's going to be one of those choices. I would welcome a plan that is safe, that kids don't have masks on in class while they're staying, where they're staying put. You know, for like this, for the school aspect of my class, you know, for the learning and for the discussion, to make my classes as successful as it can get. But the Israel story is concerning.
Yeah, I mean, I want to stress, when I share information that I have with listeners, it's not meant to overplay or be definitive, because information evolves, our understanding evolves. We all have to really be humble about what we know and don't know. So I don't find that definitive, but I do find it worth just kind of keeping our eye on here. So we're down to about our last minute here, and I just want to close the program by stressing again to the parents on this program and everybody listening. I hope that we can all show grace with one another. And if you make a different decision as your neighbor or even someone in your own family, I hope you can talk through it and find a way to still show love and grace to one another, because this is hard. This is really, really hard stuff. I don't know right now where my mind is for my 8-year-old. I feel like it changes every day. And I want to express appreciation for the challenge that parents have, the work that administrators are doing, the kind of work they were never trained to do, and frankly, for teachers like David and many others who are going to be in classrooms, and they're going to be frontline workers, you know, and they're going to be educating our kids, and our kids are, I hope we can tell our kids one way or another, you're loved and you're going to be okay. Chad's kids are going to be okay. Millie's kids are going to be okay. Kara's kid's going to be okay. David's kids are going to be okay. My boy is going to be okay, whether he's home, whether it's in a hybrid or in the building. Let's think about the kids who maybe don't have that reassurance, and let's pull together as a community. This is going to be a long road. To all of you, Chad Barb, thanks very much for making the time. Good luck to you. Thanks for sharing your perspective this hour.
Thank you.
Millie Safranik, good luck to you. Thank you so much. Thank you very much, Millie.
Thank you.
Kara Austin, here's hoping for more sleepful nights.
Thank you, Evan.
Thank you for having me. Thank you very much. And David Baumgartner, thanks for your perspective as a parent and a teacher. Good luck to you. All right, listeners, a lot of love to you. Let's hang in there. Let's see what school districts say this week and the state next week. WXXI News will have you covered with that. Promise you that. Rob Braden is the engineer of Connections. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.